Someone once told me that no one says life is fair. When you hear that when you're young, you have no idea what it really means. Once you've lived a little, and then you lose everything, suddenly it makes sense. This podcast is a true life memoir of someone who lost everything and is rebuilding in search of who they once were. They're sharing their story as part of their healing process, and so that anyone else out there living through similar circumstance knows that they're not alone. Hey everybody, it's Dave the Clone here, making another entry in the diary of the Feeling It, Healing It, A Diary of Recovery podcast. The saga continues, and welcome back. I am glad you decided to come back after last week. I know it went a little off the rails, and trying to avoid that this week. In fact, actually, this is... It's weird, you know, like, they call it the mechanic syndrome, right? Where you're driving around all week and your car is making a noise, then you finally take it to the mechanic and the mechanic gets in, or has you get in the passenger seat and they start driving it around and the car isn't doing any of the stuff that it was doing when you were driving alone. It won't make the noise, the weird things don't happen. That's kind of how it feels for me right now. I feel like there were several times in the last few days where things felt like really Twilight Zone-y, and then today, now that I'm finally sitting down to record, it was almost kind of one of those things too where I was like, should I record now? And then it was like, no, it's still too fresh, or the weirdness is still too weird, you know, like I needed to find a few minutes to recover. And, or I felt, you know, with the sort of, restructuring of the days and getting back into the swing of, having hours that are dedicated and that need to be accounted for. It's just been, it's been weird. It's been readjusting. And, so yeah, it's like, it's never quite felt right. And now that I'm sitting down, I'm kind of like, what did I want to talk about again? Probably not the most assuring way to start another entry in the journal. But, you know, I think there are probably going to be, maybe this is even a sign, you know, if it's not one of the highs of feeling good and feeling on course, or the lows of feeling like there's a regression happening. It's like, okay, you're kind of on the even keel. You're in between the peaks, not quite a valley, not a peak. You're just kind of hovering in the norm. Maybe that's a good thing. I've been seeing a lot of people posting on Facebook that they've been having very vivid dreams and nightmares lately, and I've definitely been feeling that. I haven't remembered any of my dreams, but I've been waking up a lot with that feeling of like, what the hell just happened? I almost feel like it's a movie plot, you know, where it's like, I don't remember the dreams, but I know that I was somewhere else for a little while just a few minutes ago. And it's actually also one of those things where I've been like super tired throughout most of the day, and I know I've gotten sleep, you know, and it's really starting to play with my head in the idea of like, when we sleep, do we actually go someplace else? You know, I think with some of the areas that I've been investigating in this whole journey with the whole sort of metaphysics and the, you know, manifestation and the other sort of tapping into the energies of the world, I'm wondering if there's something to the whole idea of like, when we're awake in this life, we're asleep someplace else, and when we go to sleep in this life, we wake up somewhere else, and who knows. But I also find it a little interesting that a lot of other people are talking about their dreams, or that the dreams have become more vivid. Someone was asking straight up if people have been having a lot of nightmares lately. And I feel like, I don't remember having nightmares as a kid. I don't remember having recurring dreams where particular monsters were showing up. But lately, I've been having that sort of feeling of, like, the dreams have been intense enough that I probably should have been scared. And sometimes there's this sort of, like, feeling in the air of, like, the aftermath of something I should have been scared of. But I definitely recall during the dream not particularly feeling scared. It's weird, you know? It's almost like in the dreams there was... there's one that I remember from a couple weeks ago where I was, like... I almost want to describe it like being on an episode of Omex Temple on Nickelodeon, whatever that was called, whatever that show was called. It was like this thing where I had to like get into a temple, but outside where I was, it was all snow and it was at night and the door to the temple was like opening and closing and you had to figure out the right timing, almost like a video game. And when I was going under, like, my leg got caught and the wall came down on it, but it didn't come down, like, it didn't hurt me. It just kind of, like, when it touched my leg, it went back up again. And I was like, well, what the hell were we even worrying about this door for, you know? This was a couple weeks ago. This was probably right before I started the new job. So maybe it was one of those things where it's about the, you know, natural inherent nervousness that you feel when you're starting something new, but the fact that I'm working with colleagues that I've been working with for years and that I know what they're expecting, I know what they're looking for from me, and I know how to do my job, so there's really nothing to be worried about. But you still have to like do that whole thing where you try to time the door and get under it, and even if it closes on your leg, you're probably going to be okay, because it's not like you're going to get instantly fired for making one mistake. And, you know, it has been kind of weird the last two or three weeks getting used to the whole, you know, answering emails in a timely fashion, plus doing all the administrative stuff like keeping track of your time. And then there's always, you know, in the time I've been away from the corporate world, there's all kinds of new platforms and new websites that companies use to keep track of projects and be more like, I don't know, more regularly in touch with your team and your management. It's just this, you know, it's getting reused to the world that is not the freelancer world. So I'm sure any of the sort of odd feelings I'm feeling are somehow tied to that, to sort of like reorienting. But so far so good. I've actually been doing some pretty cool work and have gotten a lot of pieces finished in the last couple weeks. So, you know, it's kind of, it's nice to be surrounded by some positive reinforcement. It's kind of an interesting dichotomy to have stress around it, but to know that people are kind of cool with what's going on and sort of looking forward to, I think, probably around June, so like a couple months from now, we should be at a point where a lot of this campaign I've been working on is going to finally start being released, and I'll be able to officially start putting stuff on my LinkedIn page and my YouTube, just to kind of show off to the world, you know, that the portfolio has increased. So that'll be good. It's, I don't know, you know, we're kind of finding a little bit of footing. Still need to fill the gap a bit. Even though this will at least be guaranteed regular money, there's still like probably it's like a half a job, right? You know, because it's part time. I think there's enough work on the plate that it could expand to full time, but until it does, I'm trying to figure out what the right thing to do. I mean, I'm still I'm 2/3 of the way finished with this audiobook. I actually submitted the first pass on the entire thing, all 63 chapters of it. Or is it 64? It might have been 64. It's 64 chapters. And getting feedback and notes and revisions from the author. So probably another week or two, and then that'll be done. And there are a couple other books that are posted that I'm auditioning for, because I think they're maybe something right up my alley. Like, one of them's a fiction and the other one's a motivational. So I'd love to be able to get at least, you know, one or two of these every month or two. And maybe that would be enough to kind of keep it going. But I still, you know, it's like, I still feel like there has to be now, because I have the time to do it, you know, I feel like now is really the time where I have to figure out one of these online passive income, either, you know, affiliate marketing or digital products, like something. Like, now's the time. If I don't do it now, if I wind up getting pulled into too many directions, then I probably won't. And I don't know if it's because of the way that the world is going. Some of the things I was talking about last week. Yeah, there's been some reflection on some of the way I was feeling from last week. It's really, you know, it is, it's kind of like the sadness of realizing that even though I know better, there's been a part of me that's kind of still been like a little hopeful that, just like everybody else who now that this sort of pandemic has reached a level where it's kind of over, right? Even though it's not over, we're all still going, all right, well, when's it going to get back to normal? When's it going to get back to what it was like in 2019, right before all the shit went down? And having to come to grips with the fact that it's not going to. I feel like there's a certain part of me that's been like waiting for a sign of like, okay, you're going to go back to normal. You're going to go back to feeling like you did when you at least had cash flow and income. But I have to keep reminding myself, like, yeah, you weren't happy then either, though. That was still, as much as it was what society tells you is the right place to be, it didn't feel like the right place to me. And God, it's weird how these sort of like ways that we have to take stock and figure out, not necessarily that we're going to figure out the mystery of life, but at least kind of remember where you've been, remember what you've been through, and remember, if anything, what lessons you could take from it, right? And so I think, like, I, you know, that whole idea, I've probably mentioned it several times in several chapters of this diary, the whole, like, getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I wouldn't say that I'm comfortable with it, but it's at a point where, you know, like, for the last 2 days, I woke up and I wasn't sure what I was supposed to do first. So, you know, one of the days I went for a long walk, the other one I started reading. I've all started writing again. I've started fleshing out some notes for this project that has been on the back burner for a while. And now, you know, like a day like today where I woke up thinking, okay, by this time of day, I'll have this done. By this time of day, I'll have this done. I'll get these things delivered. I actually did get the things delivered for the job, so that's good. But I didn't, like, I'm still sitting up, like, right now. It's kind of late. I'm doing this later than I wanted to be. I didn't actually, every day I tell myself I'm going to open this software that I bought, the screenwriting software, or even if it's just a Word doc, that I'm going to sit down and dedicate some time to these ideas, because now all of a sudden ideas are starting to flow. Maybe that is connected to the dreams thing. I don't know, but I'll find myself sitting there having these little dialogues in different voices now that I've been doing the voices for these books, you know, for this book. And all of a sudden I'm like, this is the story. This is the thing. This is the thing I've been thinking about. This is the thing I've been wanting to get back to. And I have these little conversations in the voices of these fictitious characters. and I go, man, I got to really remember this, or I got to write this down, because I'm having it while I'm waiting for like an animation to finish exporting for the video I'm working on for the job, you know? And so I don't know. It's weird. It's like, I feel like a weird panic button is being hit when I probably don't need to be panicking. I should be. I still, you know what it is? It's like, I think I'm afraid of feeling, of sliding into this complacency, of feeling like, okay, now you've at least got something on the books. Maybe you can relax a little bit. I think maybe, I mean, I think there is something to be said for being able to relax. Like, being in stress mode 24/7 is like super unhealthy. Everything I'm reading is talking about having to get your mind out of these traps that come from the pre-programming and the preconceived notions and the way that your mind used to operate. But it's hard. It's like, that's more second nature than understanding like how to make progress or putting aside, actually, one of the new book I'm reading is called Daring Greatly by Brené Brown. And it's all about being able to find your way to vulnerability, being able to embrace the necessity of vulnerability, and being able to separate guilt from shame, where guilt is okay because it's something that you can own and apologize for, but shame is more like a mental disorder or an illness that you need to cure yourself of. And the vulnerability side is kind of like still being able to take risks, even though you've, you know, experienced things in your life that make you averse, you know, like embarrassment and humiliation and all these things that we think mean we are not good. In fact, that's what they said. The difference between shame and guilt is I did something bad. Shame is I'm a bad person. And usually one will tend to lead to the other. And a lot of it is because we keep these things inside. We keep these secrets, and that then festers. And it's almost like the way she describes it, the way Brené Brown describes it, is that it's like there are gremlins inside your head that are saying things to you. And it's interesting because going to church a lot in the last couple months, getting more along a religious path, I guess, more spiritual, it's sort of the same thing that the pastor will say about the enemy, you know, the big bad, the one that we all know about, whether we believe in him or not, the one whose greatest trick they ever pulled is convincing the world they didn't exist, that enemy and all of their minions. And it's very similar to the way they describe being under attack, where it's like, you know, sometimes we'll get these thoughts in our head and you're wondering, like, where is that coming from? Because they're the thoughts that tell you, oh, you suck at this, you know, like the thoughts that have stopped me from writing for all these time, because it's like, dude, you suck, you know, like no one's hiring you. Oh, dude, you suck. You know, your podcast is only getting so many listens. And you're only getting so many likes on your post on Facebook. Oh, it's because you suck. And if you suck, you shouldn't do it because you're wasting your time. You know, this is the sort of thinking, this sort of shame that sets in, that makes you start to question yourself and say, all right, well, should I try to move my mind into a place where I can be okay accepting not achieving what I dreamed of achieving? And the irony there is I think at least for a little while, I've been wondering, what are my dreams really? What are the dreams that I have, you know? And was there ever really a time where I knew what my dreams were? You know, I know that there was a point in time where I was sort of hiding from the implications of what really chasing my dreams would have meant, you know? And I hate to admit it, but I know that the relationship I was in, where I was engaged, there were times where I actually thought to myself, like, all right, well, you know, you've always wanted to be a filmmaker. You've always wanted to direct a movie or several movies. You've always wanted to have like a Tarantino-esque career. I don't think I could make Tarantino's movies, but I could make my movies. And, but at the same time, and even then, this was before the whole system seems to be failing and falling apart, before we've had the longest lasting union strikes, and now streaming services kind of making the industry. I just recently read an article this week about how it's called the Great Contraction, where the flow is not there. People aren't going to the movies as much, which means studios are definitely not taking risks on anybody new, but they also are not recouping the money they're spending on movies, meaning that they're not going to then be able to make more movies after that. Plus, it ripples down. Like, okay, the 1% of everything, like the directors whose names we know, the actors who've been major draw and super famous, like the RDJs and the Cillian Murphys and even the ones that are controversial, you know, like, why am I suddenly, like, I'm watching Bound right now, so I want to say Gina Gershon and Jennifer Tilly, but they're definitely not, they're not box office draws right now, but Emily Blunt is, you know, okay, everybody who is an Oppenheimer, or Margot Robbie, you know, Barbie, everybody who is big, or what, didn't Emma Stone just win an Oscar for a movie that looks god-awful? I'm sorry, just, you know, sometimes you have those things where you look at the poster, and you're like, nope. I don't even care if this is okay. I'm just gonna have to miss out on it. This could be the most awesome thing on earth. She looks horrendous. They made this character look horrendous. These choices that were made by both her and the makeup artist and everything, I'm just like, nope, not on board. On top of that, there's this whole phenomenon, maybe this is what I want to talk about too. It's sort of like feeling like there's no place in the world to feel comfortable right now, because everybody is up in arms about everything. You know, this Dune movie came out, Dune Part 2. It's been 3 years coming. I remember watching when Dune premiered. It was one of those movies that was both released in the theater, but also streamed on HBO Max as part of their whole dealing with the pandemic situation. And I was like, man, you know, like, I've loved Dune for years. I loved the 1984 movie, the David Lynch movie. I've read the book. The book is amazing. It's one of my favorite books. And I was really, like, jazzed when that came out. I even went to the dispensary and made sure to stock up on party favors. I'm also at day 457 of sobriety right now as I'm talking about this. So I think there's this kind of vacillating kind of I miss it sometimes that I've talked about on here, and every once in a while I'll be watching a movie or I'll see a trailer, or I'll be like trying to figure out what to watch on any of the streaming services, and there'll be a movie that I'm like, oh man, the last time I watched that I was like getting so baked and it was almost because the movie kind of like is that kind of a movie. So there's definitely movies now that I feel like I'm avoiding, just like I'm avoiding the people that trigger, you know, bad feelings, the way you cut off toxic people. It's almost like, oh, maybe there are toxic movies. I never used to think that way, but there's definitely been a handful where I'm like, oh man, it's like, I love Lords of Dogtown. It was such an awesome movie, and Heath Ledger's in it, and he's awesome in it, but it was during my stoner days. There's even a lot of stoner scenes in the movie, and I'm kind of like, I don't know, maybe that was not the time to try and watch it again. But anyway, like, Dune 2 comes out, and there's so much, like, why can't people just either like or dislike anything anymore? It has to be these kind of, like, huge, all-out battle. I mean, it's like we can't coexist and have different opinions on things, even down to things as innocuous as a movie. I'm in a couple fandom groups because I liked the book, because I liked the old movie, because I liked the first movie. And the second one comes out, and it's like there is so much derision. There is so many people who write these novella posts back and forth against each other about why they're more right than the other people. Can't believe they changed this character so much. Oh, well, that's still genius. And if you're all miffed about that, then you're not a real Dune fan. It's making me almost not want to go see the new movie, you know? And I had been planning on seeing that opening weekend, and I just didn't, because I also have this weird, like, I'm so nervous about spending money on things that I, you know, haven't felt justified in being able to take a break and go see a 3-hour movie. I'll put movies on in the background while I'm working and feel fine about it. In fact, and sometimes it's an interesting way of timing. Like, okay, if I put on a 3-hour movie and then sit here and just edit the whole thing, and I don't take a break again until the credits are rolling, all right, I know I just knocked out 3 hours of time. I could just do it with a stopwatch too, but sometimes that's a little more, I don't know. First of all, I need the sound. I need the stimulus in the background. Otherwise, I start to go crazy. The silence, I can't work in silence. Even if I'm editing, I can still put on a headphone and have like a direct to my ear, be able to listen to what I'm editing. But I still need something going on in the background. Otherwise, I just feel like I'm in a cave. I'm in a cave and the moments of my life are ticking away in silence and I'm just aging and I feel it. It's the window closing, the window of not getting what I need to get done. And it's like this is the other thing that came out of this book too, about the sort of shame and guilt, and where we almost compare ourselves to the people we want to emulate, right? Like if I want to be a filmmaker, or if I want to write books, and then you look at people who, well, a real writer would have already written 4 of them. You know, a real writer wouldn't be in their early 40s and still have nothing to show for the fact that this is apparently one of their dreams, right? See, even the way I'm talking about it, I can hear myself using the words that these books say are like indicators of like, no, you see, you're still being affected by the shame monster or the gremlins, you know? So it's tough, you know, like we have to, one of the biggest things about all of these sort of aspects of the journey of the sort of getting to being okay to be in the present and to just be living each moment is the idea of we're all unique individual people. We all follow our own path. No two people's paths, just like no two people's fingerprints, are ever going to be the same. And so, as much as it's good to have role models or people to see, to be able to see as an example and try to follow in their footsteps a little bit, because that is a possible way, being okay with figuring out whatever your way is. And so it's interesting because I saw a video today on Facebook by David Pargin, who used to work for Cracked.com. I think he probably still does. Used to be one of their podcast hosts of the Cracked podcast. I'm sure he still is. I don't listen to it anymore, though, so I don't know. But I do know that he also used to write novels under the pseudonym David Wong, and he wrote the book John Dies at the End, which is one of my favorite movies. I've never read the book, but I have seen the movie multiple times. I bought the second book in that series. I have not read it yet, but it's in my collection. Having a library of books is an important thing in life. And this video was him reacting to 2 video clips. The first one was of Bo Burnham on Conan O'Brien talking about how it's very strange, and he feels like unfortunate that so many celebrities or people who've really made it will constantly put the message out there like, just follow your dream and you can do it. And he's like, you know, having someone like Taylor Swift say, just follow your dream, you'll make it, is like having a lottery winner go, just put all your money into Powerball tickets, it'll happen for you too. It's like they're talking about a lightning in the bottle, you know, one in a million chance that panned out for them. And then the other video was of Mr. Beast, the famous YouTuber who I've mentioned on here before, as well as someone I started to finally find a way to have some respect for. I just can't help that when I look at his fucking face, it's one of the most punchable faces on the planet. Like, when you look at his face, you're just like, Jesus, this guy's a billionaire. Like, come on. And he almost, I'm not going to say what I usually say. All right. He looks like someone who could be on some kind of a pedo registry. Like, he just has that face. Like, you're like, something's off about this guy. And he's got more money than he'd be able to spend in his lifetime. And he made it through becoming super popular on YouTube. And he even says, you know, I know it, one of the things that is painful to me is to see somebody quit their 9-to-5 and put all of their effort into trying to do what I did on YouTube, because the fact that I did it does mean it's possible, but there are so many people now trying to do it that it's very unlikely someone's going to just rise from like the no one, being completely unknown to being like so well known, have such a huge following that they can't, that they can actually afford to make a living and quit their day job and just do YouTube full time. And so what David Pargin was saying, he goes, you know, as much as they're both kind of like ironically being exactly the thing they're railing against, because they are people who made it going, well, you know, I'm not trying to crush your dreams. I'm not trying to throw cold water on your dreams. You probably should still follow your dreams, but you know, they also still kind of made it. What Pargin was saying is like, what you should be focusing on is making a life, making your life something that you can feel good about. And don't give up your dream, but part of making your life has to include finding a way to sustain yourself, but also leave space to be pursuing that dream. So he's like, you know, think about Herman Melville, who didn't become a world-renowned novelist in the time that he was alive. Moby Dick wasn't a huge hit while he was still around. It only sold a couple thousand copies, and he had to work office jobs basically his whole life, and he never got to, while he was alive, know the notoriety that came from that book becoming super popular. So you have to think in terms of these are the examples. Like, you know, a lot of the artists who sort of set the stage for the idea that there is a way to make a living as a creative doing something artistic really didn't enjoy the kind of fame that we think about now when we look at like movie stars and things, because, you know, like all the sort of Picassos of the world, you know, these are people who kind of, they lived, but life was a little bit simpler back then. You might have been able to get away with living on less. And at the same time, a lot of them, their names didn't become the world-renowned, world-known names until after they were gone. And that's a pretty bitter pill to swallow. And even David Pargin was saying, he's like, you know, I didn't have a novel become a bestseller and get turned into a movie until I had been writing novels for 25 years. And for 23 of those 25 years, I still worked a 9-to-5 job. So it's interesting, this concept of like trying to figure out what will make you feel fulfilled, what will make you feel successful, even if it's not the huge, almost unattainable without so much, well, I mean, not even unattainable, but it's just such a specialized, like, even though there are certain barriers to entry to all these different creative careers than there had been at one time. I mean, cameras are cheaper, computers are available that have software. Like, you wouldn't have to necessarily rely on a studio to, say, make a movie. And with the internet, you wouldn't even have to worry about getting a distribution deal. Like, maybe it wouldn't get played in a movie theater, or maybe it would if you got it into a film festival or something. There are plenty of things that put it all 100% on you. Like, you can't say, oh, well, the studios would never, you know what I mean? But at the same time, not everybody who wants to do these things might know how to do them or do them well. And so if they want to do them at the level that, you know, the Academy Award, like if they want to do it at the Christopher Nolan level, they probably still do need to rely on that industry. And now we're back to what Bo Burnham was saying. It's like, you know, some of this is like lightning striking, and you either, you know, it might happen, it might not happen. You could become Taylor Swift, or you could become Melville. You know, these are sort of like the two kind of extremes out there. And it was tough to hear, because here I was sitting there working on video work in still in the corporate world and still very creative, and I'm, you know, feeling really good about what I'm doing. The folks I'm working with are pretty quick to tell me I'm really good at what I do. I guess good enough that they are comfortable paying me to do it, you know? But I think that's the part that's like, that jumps up at me the most. That's the part that I feel like I'm mentally wrestling with, is this feeling of like, well, I'm in my early 40s. I don't have a whole stack of already written novels in a drawer, being just waiting for the first one to, you know, hit, and then I'll have all these ready to go. I don't have a stack of screenplays written. I do have this one big project that I had been putting into the world a couple of years ago, and it's probably the biggest thing that I did do, and it's hundreds of pages of script, but it still needs to, it needs to be nurtured, it needs to be revisited, it needs to have some attention paid to it from my end. And that's the other thing that this book about the shame and the guilt, it's and the vulnerability is like, you know, all it takes is a little bit of this gremlin talk in your head, and it'll make it that you would never get to the point where you feel comfortable sharing the thing. Like, it's not even where some other books talk about, you know, if you wait for the right time, it'll never happen. Once shame starts to kind of make its earworm way into your mind, once you've heard the grumblings of the gremlins and your mind has already started to retreat, that's one of the typical responses, is the isolation and the drawing within and the pulling away, because it's safer to just stay in the quiet inside yourself. It's safer to run away from the things that are making you feel shameful. And once you kind of start to get into that mode, the likeliness that you will get back to the place where you feel like you can be fearless about sharing your stuff, and that's really what it takes, is the fearlessness. And the fearlessness comes from the realization that, like, your fingerprints, you are completely unique. And so you have to like what you're doing first yourself. And that once you get to that point, then you realize it doesn't matter if people you show it to don't like it, or the people that you put it out there, if it doesn't get a million likes on social media, there will eventually be the right person to see it, the right audience will find it, you know. But once you've gotten into that mode of being shamed away and scaring yourself away from being willing to put it out there, it's very difficult. And then to be at the same time getting this, you know, very well-meaning message of, listen, you know, be practical about this shit, okay? Like, have the dream, try to become Taylor Swift, but at the same time, don't quit your day job until you become Taylor Swift, right? Don't quit your job and say, I'm going to become Mr. Beast, and not have already been trying to do that for 20 years. And it's weird, because so much shifts, so much changes. I mean, we have AI now that lets you create pictures out of nowhere, right? You know, very famously, Tyler Perry stopped construction on his $800 million studio facility that he was building because of one of the AI platforms that got showcased a couple weeks ago, where the same guy who in the same breath is talking about wanting to employ people and make sure that the crews have jobs is suddenly saying, oh, well, I'm not going to build my studio anymore because I'll just use AI. I could just type up the script and let AI build. Because, I mean, it's no joke. This AI has been able to, it's almost like as I'm watching this movie going, so if I just describe a room full of gangsters and kind of describe the characters enough and give the different sort of character motivations for them, this AI will be able to create out of thin air the picture that I need. I won't need to hire Chris Maloney. I won't need to hire Joe Pantoliano or Jennifer Tilly. I won't need the actual people. This is something that I almost feel like is exactly what all the strikes were about. And yet here we are. We can't seem to help ourselves as a species. We keep creating these things that making ourselves obsolete. And it's sort of become like a bit of an existential crisis for me in this sense of, as I'm making progress, as I'm starting to feel like I'm getting back to the point where I can do the things that I need to do and be who I once thought I could be, the world itself out there is going, oh yeah, fuck that. We're not going to need you anymore, bro. You know, you really did. You missed the friggin' boat. You know, you decided to have your life nuke right at the time where you needed to still be ready to get in the ring. And I know that's, I feel like that's the language of the gremlins. That's the sort of shame-based fear and the sort of out of touch with myself sort of perspective that the darkness is counting on, because for all of the me's that get scared away from trying, it leaves whatever little space there is for the few people who are so resilient that they never stop trying until they either do it themselves or catch their lucky break. And I'm really trying to not fall for that trick. I feel like that's just like another piece of malware in the Matrix, you know? Plus, it's like there's something about the ideas that I'm having lately and the fact that, like, I don't know, the sort of power of the positivity that has been, that has made itself known, that has materialized, I feel like now is not the time to start letting go of all that. But it does feel like, and this is one of the things, I hate to be religious for all the folks who are not religious out there, but, you know, there's something to some of this to me that one of the things the pastor said was, once you start to go down this path and once you start to get more in touch with being part of the greater plan, finding your place in the greater plan, even if that's you finding your own sense of confidence and self again, it will seem like the powers that you already thought were aligning against you are going to be coming even stronger in aligning against you now. And I think that's exactly what all this is, you know, this whole, all right, man, you know, you got to half of an income now. you'll be able to start putting things in order, but that's like a huge step from where you've been. And the sort of the gremlins have been helping keep you where you've been all this time, and so as they're losing ground, they're going to start doubling their efforts to kind of keep you from getting to that potential. And I think that's where the whole feeling like the age, feeling like the window's closing is coming from, going, all right, well, I can't keep taking like a step forward and then get pulled two steps back by some shit that isn't even tangibly real, you know, by fucking thoughts, by emotions. I mean, hell, there's even still been a certain level of kind of not missing my ex, but thinking about her, thinking about all my exes, I guess, and the taking stock of life that constantly has been happening, and the loneliness of not having anybody, and especially after reading those chapters in that book that say the sort of energy of the sex energy of having a partner who's in your corner with you, who's got your best interests in mind as part of being that significant other to you. You know, the detriment of not having that is becoming more and more undeniable to me. But at the same time, I've not been able to let go of the shame that's got me in the mindset that I have nothing to bring to the table, and therefore I don't even have any business thinking about that. Yet it's kind of like seeing it all for the much more bigger picture. And there is a certain amount of myself too that does feel like, okay, I'm getting tired of feeling like this. It's been years now. I forget where I saw this, but it's like this part of what sucks about it is that feeling of like, I've been like this for years and they just moved on. You know, a lot of on the narcissist pages too will say this stuff, but it's like you feel like your life has been in the roughshod grind meat grinder and they just kind of went on. They found someone else or whatever the hell they did. Granted, they probably are still just as mired in the problems they've had and haven't done any work on themselves and haven't healed and haven't changed and haven't evolved. But there is still something that stings about the fact that, like, you wonder, do they even think about me in these terms of, like, you know, taking the responsibility for their part of what happened and missing me, you know, like, yeah. This has been weird. This is almost like I'm having an episode on an episode. I'm trying to, I don't know. It's not like there's anything that's the other thing too, is they're kind of realizing there's nothing wrong. There's nothing right or wrong. It's just what is, right? Like, so if this is what you're feeling, if this is what you're thinking, there's nothing right or wrong about it. It's just, it is what you're thinking. It is what you're feeling. What we have to constantly keep top of mind is not letting these thoughts and these feelings stop you from still just continuing to move forward. And, you know, each day is a new opportunity to make progress. Each day is like one of the things I write in my gratitude journal every day is that I'm thankful for being one day closer to being beyond this time, you know, acknowledging that a time beyond this exists, acknowledging that there's a time already happened in the future that I have not reached yet, where this is all well behind me. One of the many things that are concepts or entrepreneurial ideas in my head will have already taken form, taken shape, been successful, and this, realizing that all of this was necessary to get to that, will have put my mind at ease. But still being here and having not reached that point yet, realizing that if I don't keep pushing through it, I'll never get there, is sort of like the pitfall. And so, like, I'm thanking myself for being one day closer to that. I just don't want to have to go through too many more days like this. Too many more days where it still feels so far away. Yeah. So I don't know I don't know what will be the signifier. I've actually been looking at places on Facebook Marketplace, even on a couple of the realty sites, looking at cars. It really, and it's all starting to feel reasonably attainable, as opposed to this time last year where it really felt like, man, I'm never going to be able to do any of this stuff ever again. My car is just going to fall apart and I'm going to have to walk. I'm going to be stuck in living with my parents. Not that that's a bad thing, but there's something about it that plagues my own sense of confidence and self-esteem, and so obviously that's something that I need to be working towards changing, and now I'm halfway there. It's just figuring out the next part. So I don't know what the point of this. I'm not sure what's going on here. I feel like the shame gremlins started to attack me in the middle of this recording. And I'm trying to actively, out loud, think out loud, combat them out loud, and see if that can become something that I can practice without effort from now on. I think that's what it is. We think that the folks who have it all figured out make it look so effortless. Like it's just easy for them to be going through every day. And I have to tell myself, like, every one of these people, every one of these megastars, every one of these famous people, I mean, we see it in the controversial shit that surfaces all the time. They're winging it just like the rest of us. They just have a bigger bank account, you know, they just have some more privilege maybe. They get a few perks from the Matrix that we don't. But those perks are there, and that we can all attain a certain level of them. It just depends on what you want out of life, right? It just depends on what you want your life to be. So, I don't know, folks. I don't know. This diary is ongoing because the journey's ongoing, because the journey is different for all of us. We might have some similarities. We might have all been through similar things or have similar scars, but ultimately, this is the part we each have to go through on our own, because that's the only way we get to finally arrive at being that better version of ourselves, right? And envision, this is where the envisioning part of the secret comes in, right? Having to really envision that person, that version of yourself that is already past all this, that looks back on this time and goes, man, yeah, I remember how serious that was. I remember how much it felt like that was going to be the rest of my life. And how you have to realize that that version of yourself is laughing at it, but also feeling the empathy for yourself, feeling the empathy for your past self. They say what you're supposed to do is try to tap into that feeling of already being past this and send that sort of love back to yourself, that sort of self-care back to yourself. Like, listen, it's going to be okay. You're going to get by this. You're going to get through this. So, yeah. I didn't think I would talk for this long. I thought this was going to be a short entry. It's a little shorter, but yeah. Brain fog, the mind storm. These are things we have to endure. And maybe they'll never be gone forever or for good. Maybe they'll be milder. Maybe they'll be the kind of things that you can, you know, think away quicker than I just did. I'm still not completely done. I'm going to be thinking about this now that I'm done. Maybe this will affect what I dream about tonight, for all I know. But thanks for listening. And I hope that you guys are able to be making it through your storms too. I hope that some of you are better at this than I am. And if you are, please let me know what tricks there are that I haven't already read a book about or figured out from all the stuff I have been reading. Sometimes even I feel like I need to remember that I'm not alone. And that's what it really, the whole point of why I started this show is to let folks out there know that you're not alone. But that street goes two ways, you know. In any case, the journey continues. So until next time.
You've been listening to a production of the Hollow Nine Network. Feeling It, Healing It, A Diary of Recovery, featuring Dave Maresca. Thank you for listening to Feeling It, Healing It, A Diary of Recovery. Dave Maresca is not a trained medical professional, psychologist, psychiatrist, or licensed professional trained in providing therapeutic mental health care. This podcast is an account of his life experiences and meant to be just that. Any advice or suggestions made in the extemporaneous dialogue of the podcast is not intended to be medical or legal advice. If such advice is what you're seeking, you are encouraged to seek out the services of a licensed professional. The Hollow Nine Network and Dave Maresca assume no liability or responsibility for the information provided in these episodes.